Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Gary Gremley. I'm joined this week by Connor Orr of the Weekside Podcast. And I gotta say, Connor, I was watching some coaches film over the past week, and I noticed that aside from quarterbacks, there are like tons of other guys on the field at once. I don't know exactly how many, but I figured we should investigate who those other guys are and actually talk about non-quarterbacks on the show, which would be, I don't know, like the first time we've done it all offseason, considering, in our defense, the absurd news cycle.
The sound that you're hearing now is every listener in their car powering down the radio so that, or powering down their podcast device, and they're saying, "No, I'm just kidding. People should listen to this. Wide receivers, offensive, they're all people too. Come on."
We're going to have a bit of an off-season primer, let's call it right here, with the non-quarterbacks, looking at a little bit at the draft class, but more looking at the free agent class and you know, quite frankly, how it's going to be affected by the depth at some of these positions here. And I want to start this one off with the wide receivers. I've been fascinated by this. I've been talking about it basically nonstop for like 6 months now. It is such a strong and deep wide receiver class. And I thought sort of a quiet headline last year was the fact that none of these receivers who were in free agency got paid because everyone just looked at the draft class and said, well, we're just going to get our guy there on the super cheap deal and find our A.J. Brown or D.K. Metcalf or Terry McLaurin or whoever it might be. But we have headliners this year like we haven't had in the past couple of years, and it's just kind of like, what's going to give here? So I guess my first question to you, Connor, is when you look at this class, we have Allen Robinson, Kenny Galladay, Chris Godwin headlining it. I mean, are these guys just settling for franchise tags? I mean, are any of these guys going to get big deals here?
I don't think so. Like you said, there's a depressed cap situation, so money is at a premium there. This is another generational receiver class that's set to come out. And really, if you look at everything situationally, it doesn't make sense to see a ton of these guys on the market. So Chris Godwin, right? You look at Chris Godwin, he's going to be back in Tampa Bay. Tom Brady's not going to let him go anywhere when that window to compete is so finite. And maybe Tom Brady is good until he's 50. I don't know. But you can't think that way when your quarterback is going to be 44 years old next year. And so Godwin, you assume, is going to come back and maybe they'll transition or figure out something else to do with Shaq Barrett. I think that the same can be said for Galladay because, you know, you want to give a fair evaluation to Jared Goff, I think, and you want to give him somebody to throw to. You don't want to just sit him back there and get him pounded. And, you know, you keep him on the franchise tag for that year, and then you get the compensatory pick, you know, next year. I mean, I don't think that's a terrible situation for the Lions. And then Allen Robinson, for as much as he's tried to box his way out of town and is continuing his efforts now, the Bears are in the market for a quarterback, like hardcore, right now. Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace are going to lose their jobs if they don't get a quarterback to come in and bring them to the playoffs after this year. So that means you need a number one wide receiver for that quarterback to throw to. I think they're going to destroy their salary cap for this season in hopes of hanging on, right, and getting that second deal and then figuring it out as they go along. And so I think Robinson's a key part of that. I really think that the value in this class, I know you highlighted Keelan Cole. You know, I think Will Fuller, if he can stay healthy, Curtis Samuel, I mean, I think that's what you're looking at here. And obviously Juju Smith-Schuster, maybe he gets the big money out of this class, but I think all the top dogs, as usual, are going to get tagged pretty quickly. Or I want to say it was the 2010 offseason into 2011 or 2011 offseason into 2012, where I remember the cap situation was a little bit tenuous, and you saw a string of bet on yourself 1 year deals where guys were taking like just high end 1 year deals that weren't franchise tag deals, and then just assuming that the cap situation was going to be better the next year. So I think we could see a string of those as well.
Yeah, I think that's probably what you're looking at here. And by the way, a quick trivia question that everyone can think about as we sort of wrap up the receivers here. Total dollars last year on the free agent market for wide receivers, who was tops on that list? That is my trivia question for Ooh. Everyone on this Monday morning NFL podcast. And yeah, I will be the guy who ignores the important numbers here and just looks at the total dollars and makes a big deal out of it. But this guy was a bit eye-opening at the top of this list. Yeah, I mean, when it comes right down to it, we have the, you know, we have the press cap situation. We also have, no doubt, teams are looking at this receiver class and saying, okay, well, we're going to do the same thing the Titans did by getting A.J. Brown. We're going to do the same thing that the Seahawks have and DK Metcalf. The rookie wage scale has created such absurd values, especially at the receiver position, where these guys are coming in NFL ready, not to mention extremely talented. And obviously, the you know, when you draft a guy, you're taking a risk. You know, you can ask the Philadelphia Eagles, who, you know, sometimes you end up with a Justin Jefferson, and sometimes you end up with a Jalen Reagor or J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. So there's risk there, but I mean, A.J. Brown made literally 1/10 of what Allen Robinson did a year ago for two guys who, I mean, quite frankly, I'd take A.J. Brown over Allen Robinson at the moment, and certainly for the future considering age. So, I mean, if you can, it doesn't feel like the full-on scratcher lottery ticket type of deal with these guys anymore if you're taking them in the top 50. And the reward is just, it's huge. It's so big as far as roster building goes.
It is, and it's a continuous cycle, right? Like you can keep replenishing that. You know, I think back to the Giants, who had Odell Beckham and then got down this avenue where they almost, and then they drafted Sterling Shepard. And I think if it wasn't for injuries, and then they got Slayton, where, you know, if you follow that life cycle, if you do it right, you really don't ever have to commit to that long-term deal, right? And you can just keep replenishing that position. And it doesn't really matter what round, like, you know, if you foster the right environment, you can keep getting these guys in here at lower deals, and especially if you have a younger quarterback, the quarterback gets better, makes the wide receivers better, all that stuff, you know, can kind of work a little bit harmoniously to the point where, like, you know, gosh, I mean, I don't see, you know, receivers, I'm not going to say that they're going to go the way of the running back. That's not really what we're trying to say, but at the same time, like, it's going to make a lot less and less sense to pay them big money over time. And I think that this free agent market specifically might be one of those times that we're like, huh, that makes a lot of sense. And these poor guys are going to be scrapping a little bit to get some good deals.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's so wild about it. It's such an important position, whereas maybe running back isn't so much. There's just so much depth and so much talent at it right now. But even like, you know, I remember Ed Bouchette had reported like a year and a half ago that Juju Smith-Schuster might not ever get a long-term deal from Pittsburgh. And it was kind of like, oh, no way. Couldn't imagine that. But you look at it now and it's just like, I don't know how they'd even do it. One, with their cap situation. Two, with the fact that I don't really know if they, I don't know how badly they need him. You know,
Chase Claypool.
They come to, yeah, I mean, if they come to a team friendly agreement, maybe that's what it ends up being. And look, everything is set up for a lot of team friendly agreements here. Tennessee's another one to keep an eye on. Corey Davis out there on the market. AJ Brown can renegotiate after this upcoming season. And they did just move on from Adam Humphries, so you figure there might be room for Corey Davis on a one-year deal here. And other than that, I mean, I don't know. I think you're right on the Bucs. I think they end up tagging Chris Godwin. I think they also bring back Antonio Brown, because I think they're just not enough teams willing to lower themselves into that sewer at this point. But you know, a lot of these guys are going to be looking for those big money deals, and they're just going to be bummed out.
Yeah, it's weird that we continue to trick ourselves into thinking that one of these classes of anything really but quarterbacks and offensive linemen are, and pass rushers to some degree, are going to be lucrative, right? I mean, you know, and cornerbacks too. Yeah, and those are really the only positions. I mean, it sounds like such a banal like analysis of the game, like almost like I'm channeling Dave Gettleman a little bit here, but at the same time, it's such a truism, right? It's quarterbacks, it's cornerbacks, it's pass rushers, and it's protecting the passer. Like, that's really it. Everything else you can view as completely and totally replaceable. And I don't know. This is one of those good springs, I guess, to remind ourselves of that. And maybe to all the receivers out there, when you're in college and you get a chance to Richard Sherman the whole deal, maybe don't turn that down.
The answer to the trivia question? Do you want to take a guess before I reveal the answer?
So it was, who signed the biggest total money deal out of all the receivers?
Total value, yeah, not annual. Although this guy was third annual, so it's not like it was a
total, you know, value
18-year deal.
Total value. It's going to be someone weird, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. That's what makes it a great trivia question.
I mean, it's not like Cole Beasley or someone, is it?
No, he's not that good.
Who is it?
Randall Cobb.
Oh,
Randall Cobb got $27 million over 3 years. He also got the most guaranteed money.
Bill O'Brien. Dun, dun, dun,
it,
dun.
It is some looking at this list. I mean, I thought Robbie Anderson. I think Robbie Anderson is just a big time talent. I thought he was going to break the bank. He obviously didn't. Emmanuel Sanders got 2 for 24. Brashad Perriman. I thought Brashad Perriman was going to get a big deal coming off that big finish in Tampa last season. And no, he settled for 1 year, 6.5, sort of bet on himself a little bit, but also kind of had to. And frankly, it didn't work out. I don't think he's getting a whole lot more on the market this upcoming offseason. So,
if you're a wide receiver at this point, your prayer is just for one team to be so desperate. Like, situationally, think about where the Ravens were coming into this offseason, where they were so obviously desperate for a wide receiver, but the market just didn't bear it out, and there was really nobody for them to spend on. And maybe the Ravens are that team this year that goes out and gets a Juju Smith-Schuster or a Will Fuller specifically, I think, would fit really well there. But you need that team. You need a down market. You need all these things to work for you in order to get that deal, and there just aren't a ton of wide receiver desperate teams out there right now.
There are a couple teams who maybe are looking to please a quarterback who can now bring in one of these guys at a reasonable price and be like, see, we got someone.
Think about if you're Brian Gutekunst, what you could do for the future of the Aaron Rodgers relationship this offseason. Like,
yeah.
It's like Black Friday shopping right now for wide receivers. It's going to be tremendous.
Well, and I think the Packers are specifically interesting because we've seen a lot of young guys struggle to sort of catch up with Aaron Rodgers early in their career. So those guys tend to take off a little bit later, maybe. But bringing in a veteran is probably the way to go for Green Bay. So we'll see what they do here to sort of rectify maybe the lack of activity among the potential Rodgers weapons last year. But let's go to the offensive line here for a little bit. This is kind of an interesting year for offensive linemen. One, because you actually have a pretty good draft class coming up. It seems like every year for the past decade, we've just been saying, "Boy, this is a pretty crummy group." Last year, you had the four tackles, and then after that, you had a pretty steep drop off. This year, it's a really good group coming into the league. So I think teams are always going to, if they can convince themselves that they can do it via the draft, they will do it that way. But handful of guys here, you know, Trent Williams, I think even at his age, I think he showed last year he has plenty left in the tank, and I would bet on him having a good 3 years left in his, you know, let's call it his prime here at this point. And then you got some interior guys, but I guess the guys who always kind of interest me are the offensive tackles, because you're always looking for really just good enough at offensive tackle. And, you know, like a guy like Darrell Williams in Buffalo ended up emerging as a quality right tackle last year. I mean, he's been that earlier in his career, but injuries sort of made him a big question mark. Is he in for a big payday here? I mean, if you could plug in Daryl Williams the way he performed a year ago, you're feeling pretty okay about what you have at right tackle, and that's something that a lot of teams do not feel right now.
Yeah, I pegged him as a potential tag candidate, which I didn't see written a lot of other places, just because offensive line, I think, is the one market that is perpetually going to be bigger or more robust than we expect going in, and that's because quarterbacks are still the biggest investment piece in the game, and, you know, the way that the general managers kind of understand it is like, okay, well, X plus Y equals Z, and we need a good offensive line to protect these guys and see how everything works out. And so, yeah, I think that Daryl Williams, I really like, you know, really turned his career around last year. And the Bills are going to be desperate to keep that continuity. And I think what's going to help Williams specifically is that the Bills are going for it this offseason, right? This is the going for it offseason, where they saw themselves within like a grasp of the Super Bowl, and so now they're going to punch the accelerator. That means they're going to bring back guys maybe that they shouldn't bring back. They're going to spend more money than they think they might want to, because Josh Allen's still on his rookie deal, and, you know, all that stuff works out. But yeah, I mean, I think this is a really, really good opportunity to get a good offensive lineman in free agency. I mean, even Cam Robinson is like maybe your kind of median based, like, you know, if you he's the demarcator between like quality and quantity of tackle, and, you know, but a solid guy there. And, you know, Taylor Moton is obviously, you know, that's a guy that I could see spending top money on, like actually resetting the market for, you know. And so I think this is a really interesting class, but again, I doubt Carolina lets him go, because you're trying to get a Matt Stafford, you're trying to lure a veteran quarterback, and you're not going to let your left tackle go either.
Yeah, it's speaking of left tackles, the guy I find most interesting, because I was really I don't want to bust on him. I was just shocked to see him in the top 40 of a lot of free agent lists out there, is Alejandro Villanueva in Pittsburgh. And part of his age, yeah, he's 32. He's also coming off a year where he just didn't play particularly well. But the thing that makes me most nervous about him is this is the old, you know, everyone used to throw out the, you know, Donald Penn didn't give up a sack this year type of stat with the Raiders. And it's like, well, the ball was coming out of Derek Carr's hands within like the first 1.4 seconds of every play. So it was kind of difficult to give up sacks that year. And what you saw from the Steelers last year was, you know, as we all know, the all-time quickest quick game passing attack that the league has seen in a while. There just wasn't a whole lot of stress put on their offensive line as far as pass protection went, and Villanueva still had some issues. You kind of saw it, especially late in the year. I couldn't see sort of bringing him in as something more than like sort of a you know, a one-year affordable stopgap, depending on what the market ends up being. And, you know, you brought up Cam Robinson. I know Cam Robinson brings some risk with him, but I think you can sort of say there's sort of an untapped ceiling maybe for Robinson at this point. But I'd rather, you know, Kelvin Beachum, I think, is a guy I'd bring in before Villanueva. I'd probably bring in Okung, too. I mean, I'm talking about guys purely on the left side of the line who have played there. And Villanueva makes me awfully nervous, though.
Well, and it's another one of those like truisms that you would go back to, but if you're Pittsburgh and you're bringing back Ben Roethlisberger, an aged Ben Roethlisberger, for one more season, and you're not retaining the left tackle, what does that say about your own internal evaluation? And if, you know, you're another team in the league, Pittsburgh has routinely proven time and time again that they're the best at evaluating talent, or one of the best teams at evaluating talent in the NFL. And so does that factor in at all to your decision making, where it's like, okay, you know, these guys aren't keeping Villanueva, so why would I go out there and spend that money when I could just, you know, try to make this work? And I'll add that I think one of the things that we don't talk nearly enough about is offensive line coaching, right? And the fact that so many of these guys' careers have ebbed and flowed with coaches. And, you know, this is a position group that can get much better really, really quickly with good coaches. I think it's why you see offensive line coaches as one of the first line of defenses for struggling coaches to hire and fire. The Giants did it last year in the middle of the season when they had a rookie offensive tackle. And I think that will become more obvious over time. I think there's some guys who are really, really, really good at coaching offensive line and are typically on teams that have really, really good offensive lines, and that's not a coincidence. And I think some of them are just friends of coaches who, you know, couldn't get an offensive coordinator job and just kind of get stuck somewhere. And, you know, that's easy to tell too. And I think that's pretty obvious. So I think that's an interesting thing too. And I wonder how much of that factors in, where if you're someone like, gosh, I mean, you know, Dante Scarnecchia is an obvious one, but the former offensive line coach of the Patriots. But if you're someone with that level of ability, and few people were, you know, you're not going out and spending on the offensive line. You're bringing guys in and making them better.
You could have named that segment, you should have hired Bill Callahan. I mean, he's wherever he goes, he ends up getting the Browns had some talent up front, but he also he got some big time years out of guys who you would not have expected to be big time contributors. Wyatt Teller, first and foremost. But yeah, as far as, you know, the rest of this free agent class goes, you know, if you're talking about interior guys, I think Brandon Scherff is a difference maker in the run game. And I think that's worth spending on the interior. But we've also seen, I mean, look, we've seen some guys who really probably shouldn't be on the field lining up at guard and center on a handful of teams. So, you know, how much do you pay for a Joe Tooney or a Corey Linsley to sort of prevent that from happening to your team here? Because there's not a ton as far as, like, pure interior guys, you know, whether it be this free agency class or this draft class this year. So you figure Tooney and Lindsay, they're getting paid here.
Here's the one caveat to all this that I think is really interesting, and you and I have talked a little bit about this, is oftentimes big games where all the other coaches are watching, so the Super Bowl, like that, you know, in the end of the playoffs, where there's a consequential, and in GMs too, when there's a consequential breakdown at a position, it does inform the offseason, right? So look at the Kansas City Chiefs breaking down in the Super Bowl and essentially losing that game because of their offensive line, A, and B, their inability to, for some reason, bolster that, right, and do things to help their offensive line throughout that game. And so I do think that makes a difference in the offseason. I do think that creates a sense of urgency to get better at offensive line, because your thought process is like, well, God, they have Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and they still can't win a Super Bowl because, you know, there's a leak in the, up front. And so I think that's going to be an interesting sort of informative Super Bowl and maybe that helps change the market a little bit.
Let's go to the other side of the ball here. We're going to call this, we'll call it defensive lineman. It includes edge guys who played standing up last year. So this is sort of edge plus interior D line. But that's just way too wordy to say. Defensive lineman here. I mean, look, there's sort of been let's call it a debate, a discussion across sort of NFL Twitter and NFL media about, you know, do you want to build your, would you rather have your pass rush built up or your secondary built up? The way I view it is this. Ideally, you have, you know, five Darrell Revis-type coverage guys on the back end, and then you're feeling fine. I think the way, the way the sport is played at this point, if you have a weakness in the secondary, if you have one guy who's a liability, now you have an issue. Whereas when you're building up your pass rush, if you get one or two good guys and that one or two guys are kind of not effective, you can still have a great pass rush. And if you have a great pass rush, it obviously makes the lives of the guys on the back end much easier than it is if you can't get to the quarterback and can't bother him. So the nice thing about shopping for a pass rusher is it's a position where they're the aggressor. One guy can make a huge impact that sort of has a chain reaction on the rest of your defense. And I think that's why it's still worth paying for these guys if it's the right guy. maybe not overpaying, but if you have a guy who you feel is truly a difference maker, that's the way to go, and that's a way to upgrade your entire secondary without actually trying to shop around and sort of building a reactionary position that also involves a lot of chemistry in it.
I agree, and this is like, you know, to continue off our my last point. This is a Super Bowl that was super informative on the value of pass rushing, and I mm-hmm. think that, you know, to think that that doesn't matter. Like, I remember covering the Giants in 2013, and it was the year after the Seattle Seahawks had crushed the Denver Broncos in the Super Bowl. And so, what did every single embattled general manager do? They went out and got big cornerbacks, right? Big lengthy cornerbacks to thump at the line of scrimmage. And, you know, the market for them was just bonkers for a year, and bad guys were getting big deals, right? And so now you look at this, you know, Jason Pierre-Paul and Shaq Barrett totally destroy teams in the Super Bowl. And so now you have all these guys, coming out and it puts a premium on them. And I don't think there's any doubt about that. And so this is going to be an interesting market. I like Aldon Smith. I think that is a guy who I watched a ton of last year and just blown away by his ability to get back into the league and to, you know, get himself to a point where he was able to be a factor on that defense. It was an awful defense, but not because of him. You know, I think that he was all over the field. He's just such a dominant player, singular player, and he plays the run just as well as he plays the pass. And so that's like an all-around guy that I like that you could probably have for not a ton of money. You know, I think that's a safe investment piece there.
Yeah, he, I don't know what the numbers end up being. He had played just a ton of snaps last year for a guy who had not been, I'm bringing up mm-hmm. now, 808 snaps is... that's an obscene amount of playing time. So you wonder, even if you bring him in, he'll be bringing up his age here with a very slow internet connection all of a sudden. So he'll be 32 in September. So even if you want to put him in a rotational role, and that's another thing we can get to here, you might get an even more effective player at this point. But you look at like a J.J. Watt, and Enola Diana Russini had put out the report that Watt was drawing offers around 15, 16 million, which is, you know, just a smidge below what he was set to make with the Texans this year. So if you bring in a J.J. Watt and he's just going to play 40 snaps a game for you instead of the 10,000 snaps he played last year for the Texans, where he was triple teamed on every play because there's no one else worth blocking on that defensive line. I mean, that's a potential difference maker in a part-time role.
Yeah, yeah. And that'll be a really interesting... Me personally, I'm not spending a ton of money on J.J. Watt. You know, I don't think that's a place that I would want to go. If I'm a GM, I think that, you know, unless you sense a total void in that room where you need a guy to come in and fill the personality, you need a guy that's going to come in and mentor people. Like, if there's extraneous sort of conditions to your signing. I love Hassan Reddick. Like, I think that is a guy mm-hmm. like the Cardinals had figured out how to use at the end of last year. I think he had, what, 6 sacks in the last 4 games, and all of a sudden they're turning him loose and they're putting him in a position that feels a little more natural to him. Like, that's a guy that I'm going after. Because I think, again, as this class kind of compresses and we see who's remaining on the field, like Matt Judon, for example, like, I could see the Ravens tagging him again, or at least entertaining the possibility, because he's just so important to what Don Martindale does, and they're not going to be able to get somebody else in there to replace him immediately. So I think there's going to be a lot of interesting guys like that. But Hassan Reddick is one where, like, if the Cardinals let him go and assume that was kind of a fluke, because I think he did have 5 of those sacks in one game, so I think that's important to keep in mind. But if they assume that's kind of a fluky thing and they can maybe move some of their other pieces around to replace him, then that's a guy that I go after. Like, that's a guy that Bill Belichick could eat up, you know, and do some really interesting things with.
Yeah, he had and yes, you're right. He had 5 sacks in that one game against the not very mobile Daniel Jones with a hamstring injury. Reddick was really effective in sort of a part-time role earlier in the year, though, and then when Chandler Jones went down, he sort of emerged as a big-time talent. And look, obviously, he's a one-year wonder at this point, and are you taking your life into your own hands if you sign him? But he's a fascinating guy in this market. Some of these guys... Ngakoue is kind of, I guess, the poster boy for this, but Trey Hendrickson, I'd sort of drop into this category too. Sort of the pure pass rush specialist guys, and I do wonder how those guys get viewed as we saw a slight uptick in run-first offenses in 2020. I think the rate went from like 41% to 42%, which is the first time in forever we've actually seen an uptick in run-pass balance, run percentage. So, I wonder if a lot of teams are, as you sort of look at the Derrick Henry type approach where, okay, well, everyone's getting small and fast on defense, we're going to get big and physical on offense. Maybe that's something you see going forward. I wonder how it affects teams' evaluations of a guy like Ngakoue or a guy like Trey Hendrickson.
Well, and two, it's a reflection of how well you've built everything else. Like the Saints, like Trey Hendrickson doesn't exist without Cam Jordan, Sheldon Rankins, who was another guy that really kind of cleared some space when he was healthy last year. Like, one doesn't happen without the other. And I think that teams do eventually kind of catch that fallacy, right? Where, maybe it's you're a product of... You're just not solely a product of the defense, but all that stuff helps, right? All the things that you have around you helps. And so I agree with you. I think if you're not playing the run at this point, that's why I liked Aldon Smith so much. If you're not playing the run aggressively, if you can't be on the field for three downs, if the defense or if the offense goes quick and tries to trap you on the field, mm-hmm. you're becoming a liability increasingly. And I do think that the NFL is getting bigger. I do think it's getting stronger. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes, because it only makes sense, right? What the Titans, you can't find Derrick Henry, but you can get big people to push people around. That is a cheap, renewable resource in this environment. Whereas, other things are at such a more premium, right? Speed is a one in a million thing that you have to pay for. Whereas, big physical people pushing people together is something that you can find a great deal of.
So the actual free agent market here is really interesting. And as far as the draft class goes, I think you don't have any Chase Young type guys coming into the league, but you do have an interesting and sort of deep defensive line class coming in. But look, Shaq Barrett, if they're going to tag Chris Godwin, this is Shaq Barrett's best opportunity to get a big long-term deal. I think Shaq Barrett's absolutely worth in the neighborhood of $60 million over three. And we'll see if he gets it or not in, again, depressed cap year. But, if there are enough teams looking to get that difference maker on the edge, I think he absolutely should be getting paid. Leonard Williams is the other guy to sort of, obviously a very good player earlier in his career and had that monster breakout year last year. Do you buy it? I guess that's a question teams are going to be asking themselves.
Dave Gettleman is just going to keep tagging him until the end of time. We're going to have to, like, the league is going to have to actually come up with a percentage raise. Like, Leonard Williams will be 31, and it'll be like a 900% raise from his initial salary. It'll be like the 18th time in a row he's tagged, and he'll have, by that point, bought several small islands.
I was going to say, he's gonna have like an ownership stake by 2028.
Oh man, I loved it. You know what though? Just as an aside, Dave Gettleman is building a really good defensive line, and I have joked about him, probably not as much as a lot of other people, but enough where I do feel it necessary to give him some kudos there. I think they're going to do some serious damage next year if they can bring everybody back, and I think they will bring everybody back.
Yeah. I'm a big Carl Lawson guy. I was shocked when we were putting together our top free agents list to see that Melvin Ingram is 32 years old. I did not anticipate that. I do wonder what phase he's in his career right now. And you mentioned Matt Judon. Judon's just really interesting to me as a guy. I think he has more value in Baltimore than he does anywhere else. He's just been such a valuable piece for that defense. I don't know if anyone else is going to break the bank for him. but it's almost like, I don't know, if you're the Browns and you just rolled over a bunch of cap space or something, is it like, okay, well, let's get Matt Judon and make the Ravens worse and make us a little bit better.
That's a good point. And I think that they're the kind of front office that could probably think that way, right? It's not like a long-term commitment, but, you know, you just do enough to bang the Ravens a little bit. I think that they're gonna have to upgrade their pass rush this offseason to get somebody to just, you know, if you got somebody that was like just a little bit better than Olivier Vernon was, you know, you're going to make Myles Garrett unstoppable. And I think that that's going to be a really fun thing to have happen in Cleveland.
And the other guy I'm really interested to see what happens with him on the market is Leonard Floyd here, who had such a nice year under Brandon Staley, who he reunited with the Rams last year. Obviously, I mean, look, he was a high draft pick. He's talented. That's why they took him so high in Chicago. The thing that's so fascinating to Leonard Floyd is I think it's very easy to look at this and say, like, well, you know, he found the right defense coordinator in Brandon Staley, and he found the right defensive line playing with Aaron Donald and getting all those one-on-one matchups. And he was such a disappointment in Chicago that you don't break the bank for him. But you look at what Chicago did Robert Quinn was the worst free agent signing of the 2020 offseason when it came to the value they got on the field. They just got nothing out of him in Chicago. And whatever reason that might be, do you put it on Chuck Pagano? I don't know. Do you put it on the fact that they have a slow track at Soldier Field, and that also, you know, that not only affects the opposing offense, but it affects your pass rush? A lot of things, but you might just sort of look at Leonard Floyd and say, okay, maybe he's not quite what he was with the Rams last year, but he's also a lot better than what you saw in Chicago.
I'm terrified in the same way that I would be scared to sign a big free agent off of a Vic Fangio team, right? And Brandon Staley mm-hmm. is Vic Fangio's apprentice. And what that defense does is it creates these, like, star players at these positions who, if they follow the scheme, are going to become these, you know, and there is a great deal of personal work involved in that. I'm not, you know, downgrading that, but look at everywhere that Fangio has been in the NFL over the last like 15 years. And then Staley, who's a direct disciple of that. And, you know, Justin Simmons is a perfect example in Denver. They're going to have to tag him again, probably to keep him around. But the fear is that, you know, if you sign him to that big deal and then you let Vic Fangio go, what becomes of him? And I think mm-hmm. that is the same fear, I think, with anybody who is in that Brandon Staley system. It's the same scheme, right? It's a little bit of a dolled up version of the same scheme. So it's going to create star players just by purpose of following the rules. And I think if I'm another team that isn't running that system, and really there's only two teams that are running that system, then I would be scared to commit to something like that.
Let's go to the defensive backfield at this point, and we'll kind of, I don't have a ton to say about either of these spots here, safeties and cornerbacks. I do want to start with safeties. I mean, look, 5 years ago, it was kind of like, all right, everyone's going to play this, you know, this cover three looks, these Seattle-style secondary, and you need your single high guy, you need your rangy Earl Thomas, and by the way, Earl Thomas is still unsigned. You wonder if someone's going to sign him this year. You need that guy in the backfield. That's what everyone's looking for, and we're just at a point in the league right now where everyone's using so many split safety looks, and it was already a position that was kind of getting devalued, you know, a couple years ago. Just none of the safeties got paid. But you look at guys like, I mean, I love a good rangy center field safety. John Johnson, I think, fits that mold. Marcus Williams coming out of New Orleans, that guy's available. Malik Hooker's really interesting. He's coming off an injury, but that's what he was. That's why he went so high in the first round a couple years ago, and he just never really fit ideally with what Matt Eberflus was doing in Indianapolis. So you look at those guys and you just wonder, will they ever have that type of value again, like what we saw an Earl Thomas type guy had 5 years ago?
That's a great point. And, you know, as the schemes evolve and the importance of certain things evolves, I think that certain character traits you're looking at are going to downgrade. And, you know, this class in general is the perfect example that they're the embodiment of let's copy the Seahawks. You know, that a lot of these guys are in that sort of area. I mean, Justin Simmons and John Johnson are probably the best safeties available. But they're Fangio guys, right? And they're Staley guys. And so again, it's like, do you want to spend that kind of money on them, not knowing how to unlock them to their fullest potential elsewhere? And so that leaves you with, you know, to me, maybe the best option is someone like Malik Hooker, where you're probably going to be able to get him cheaper and you're going to be able to revive his career, or at least attempt to do that in a scheme. Like, I think that's where the value is in this class, because otherwise you're going to be spending a lot of money for somebody that, to be honest, you don't know how to use. And the analogy there is like, for Christmas, my parents asked me what I wanted, and I asked for, you know, this absurdly expensive pair of running shoes that like people who win marathons wear. And, you know, I am like a guy who like plods through the park, you know, a couple times a week. And, you know, you put them on and you run, and sure, it feels great, but it's like, I am not the person who needs this. You know, this is not going to change my life in any way, shape, or form. And I think that that's what some of these safeties are like. They just don't fit with the scheme and the system. And, you know, you're not going to be able to use them to their fullest potential.
I know, it's just, I mean, you look at Matt Eberflus, and no one will look at Matt Eberflus and be like, oh, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. We right. could totally pluck out of this defense and make guys better,
right.
But Hooker might be the one type of guy who they just, he just wasn't the right fit for what they were doing there. And this is also going to be, this is a position where you're going to see a couple guys tagged. It's only $11.2 million is the projected number for the franchise tag. Justin Simmons probably gets it for the second year, which is still perfectly affordable for him. Marcus May, it sounds like, is going to get tagged here. So I think that's going to be an option for a handful of these guys. Cornerback, which obviously is still the more valuable position here in the secondary. It's a good cornerback group coming in. It's a very deep draft group coming up. So we'll see how it affects these guys. I might be, we're going to get to linebackers in a minute, and those are some, there's one guy, I will die on this hill for him, and I will probably die. But as far as the cornerbacks go, I really like William Jackson. I think William Jackson is a legitimate number one. I know he had a bit of a down year last year, but I would pay for William Jackson. I you know, to get him for 3 years as a true number one. And when you move past that, it's just a lot of guys who are, the cornerback position always fascinates me, because it's like, when you get outside the top, let's say 15 to 20 guys, those guys in range like 20 to 75, they just year to year, there's such volatility. I mean, you can shuffle those guys however you want. Ronald Darby is a guy who's out there again. I think there are years where Ronald Darby has been a top 30 corner. I think there are years where Ronald Darby has not been one of the 100 best corners in the league. It's just such a volatile position once you get outside the elite guys. And, you know, it's, I think that makes it particularly difficult to invest in.
Yeah, I agree. That said, Shaq Griffin is a guy that I think I would spend money on. And I don't know if the Seahawks are going to do that, if they're going to chalk it up to, well, he was good, but our whole defense was trash anyway, and we have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. But I don't think that that makes any sense. I think that Shaq Griffin played really well on a bad defense, and I think that a good GM is going to recognize that and bring him in. I think he's a number one cornerback somewhere.
And again, the stress on cornerbacks who play on teams who don't have pass rushes. I don't want to overstate it too much. Garyon Conley is a guy I like. I liked him last year. I continue to like him. I just think when you play in that Texans defense where they just had nothing in the pass rush the last 2 years, and you're asking guys to cover for the amount of time they have to cover for, it just makes them look bad. And I think you could put Shaquille Griffin in that category. Quentin Dunbar is also out there, another Seattle guy. Dunbar specifically, I think, played through some injuries last year that probably zapped him pretty good. So you wonder if you're going to find value there when it's all said and done. But there are a lot of guys, you know, do you think A.J. Bouye can bounce back here as sort of
guy? Chidobe Awuzie, look at another guy.
Yep.
Played on a team with zero pass rush.
Yep. I mean, it's going to be really really interesting to see how this market plays out. You got a guy in Patrick Peterson who is, frankly, he's declining. And I guess it's a question of how rapidly do you think that decline is happening. I think it's happening a little too fast for me to be comfortable with signing him. Mike Hilton is really interesting to me. I think he brings a ton of value as a blitzer out of the slot. I don't know if I would. I think he, you know, almost like Junon, he has a lot of value to the Steelers. I don't know if he has a ton of value to another team. I think he's a decent quality player, but I don't think he's a guy you pay if you're outside of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I agree. No, I think this is a really it's going to be an instructive class to see where people kind of view the game going. You know, if they're going to load up on these guys, then maybe they still think that this is going to be a you know, an air raid sort of future in the NFL. But I don't know where it's going. I think Patrick Peterson's the kind of guy that you sign like you would Richard Sherman to come in and coach up a room of young guys, you know, to mm-hmm. get to give your room some identity. And I think that he'd be good at that. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, you can't, you know, are you going to depend on him to lock down your number one guy every week? Probably not. But that era is also, you know, going or long gone at this point. I mean, there really isn't that kind of dependence on cornerbacks at this point either.
I also really like Akilo Witherspoon, and it's irrational, but, I hope he gets a starting job somewhere. I think he's really good, and he might not be very good.
Can I guess, by the way, as we transition into linebackers, who the one that you're obsessed over is?
Yes.
Okay. For those who don't know, I don't even know if you know this, Gary, but when you fill out your power rankings or you submit your award picks, there is always an expectation from the rest of the staff that there is like a highly esoteric you know, sort of spirit behind this. And so
yep.
like I, you know, I remember texting my co-host on the Weak Side podcast, you know, we were talking and the award picks came in and, you know, we were comparing, picks, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh Jesus, did you see who Gary picked? You know? And then it's like, all right, you know, and it's not a bad thing, but it's just like, it forces you to like, it forces you to rethink everything that you've been doing. And then it's like, okay, now am I too in the mainstream? Like, Gary's the kid who shows up at the high school party and wants to play television on vinyl. And everyone's like, what is going on here? And so I think that that is the precursor to me wondering if Matt Milano is the person that you're obsessed about in this free agent class.
No, oh. But I do like Matt Milano. Matt Milano is not my television on vinyl here. it's look, I think Matt Milano is going to get paid. It's not a great linebacker class here in free agency or in the draft. Lavonte David's probably your headliner, so we'll see how it plays out. But the guy I love, and he has been objectively terrible so far in his career, but he's so fast and he's so explosive. And I think I mentioned a couple years ago, I was like, oh, this guy, this is your breakout star. Jared Davis out of Detroit. And again, he's just been really bad. And it doesn't add up. And I think there's got to be like half the defensive coordinators in the league must be looking at him and being like, oh my goodness, like, give me that guy and I'll figure it out with him. You know, I think he's a guy who probably will always be primarily a blitzer on passing downs, but I think it's fine. I think he's really good in that role. He's so fast. He's so explosive. I'm stunned at how quickly it went south for him under the Matt Patricia regime in Detroit.
Some interesting stats on Gerard Davis. Played 14 games, only 29% of defensive snaps last year, so a rough go there. And probably the NFL coverage linebacker's equivalent of the Golden Sombrero allowed a perfect 100% completion percentage from quarterbacks last year. 15 of 15, an opposing quarterback rating of 144.6, which was up from his 116.6 the year before. But in your defense, missed tackles way down. So there you go. I don't know what else to say. He blitzed less than he ever had in his career last year. He got to the quarterback less than he ever had in his career last year. And he covered worse than he had at any point in his career last year. That said, you go to New England, which would not, well, I don't know. Maybe you don't go to New England because Patricia is now there, and Patricia barely used you last year. But you go to a team like that who can figure out how to use that one tangible skill set, and all of a sudden, you know, you're back on top, you know, and Gary looks like a genius here. So I like it. I like the play, the long-term play from you.
Those coverage numbers are absolutely repeatable for him, by the way. He has been, I had this conversation a couple years ago on, I think it was on like the Locked On Lions podcast or something, when I was talking up the Lions as the next dynasty in the NFL. But I was like, oh, just give him more reps. Just give him more reps at coverage and he'll pick it up. And again, I don't know exactly how it could have gone so wrong in Detroit. Except, maybe it was just too much on his plate at that point. Maybe you have to simplify things for him, let him be more of a fast flowing guy. But he, he's, I'm going to regret everything that I've said during this segment.
In your defense, there was zero development in Detroit under Matt Patricia. Zero. Yep. And what did he do instead of coaching up younger players? He panic signed veterans and put them in their spots and took them off the field and didn't give them a chance to get better. I do think that there's a lot of guys, you know, that could end up being like the, I've never seen the Lost Boys, but I'm just going to call them the Lost Boys because I don't know. Is the Lost Boys about something terrible?
Is that the Vampires one? I don't even know. I haven't seen it either.
Let's just do a quick cursory Google search here to make sure I'm not
it's like we're both Jenny Brentices at this point. We have no idea what this pop culture reference is.
Oh, wow. It's like a, it's like an 80s vampire movie. Yeah.
Yes.
A comedy horror, with Corey Haim,
Kiefer Sutherland. Yeah.
Wow. Corey Feldman, what didn't have Corey Feldman in it back then? I don't know why they're called the Lost Boys, but maybe, it's like, that reminds me of like, every Christmas I had this uncle who, you know, when his family hosted, and so we would walk in with all the Christmas presents and he would be like, oh my gosh, it's like the gift of the Magi here. And I was like, but it's not, because the gift of the Magi is you taking something from yourself to give to some, you know, there was like that imbalance, right? Where it's like, yep, I cut off my hair, but you got me a hat. Like, that is just because there's a lot of gifts, it doesn't mean it's the gift of the, you know what I mean? Like, that is, please stop saying
the word in it.
It just drives me nuts. Maybe there's a group of, you know, and I think DeAndre Swift could be one of those guys too, where just never got the chance to be developed with reps, to sacrifice, you know, for short-term gain for Patricia to try to legitimize him as a coach there. And so I think if somebody wants to spend an offseason with him, he could be a special player. I think you could teach someone to cover with that speed. I think you can teach someone to put their body, to anticipate and put their body between a quarterback in the ball. I think you could do that.
He just felt like every coverage rep just feels like he is deer in the headlights. I mean, he just freezes and guys just run around him, and by the time he reacts, it's too late. So we'll see what happens here. He's just, half the defensive coordinators in the league must be looking at him and just saying, let me have him, I can fix him, which obviously most of the guys are wrong when they think that, but I can't wait to see how spectacularly bad this this segment sounds in like the Michael Jackson video bad.
Yeah. Well,
there you go. Know,
yeah. Did you know, by the way, interesting trivia question, as we fade out of that, that song was supposed to be a duet between Michael Jackson and Prince.
Oh, really?
And the reason that Prince turned it down, he read the lyrics, and I guess it was supposed to be like a call and response thing, you know, like kind of an argument between the two of them. But Prince read the lyrics, and he said, "Who gets to say your butt is mine?" And someone said, "Michael Jackson." He said, "Well, then I'm not doing it." And then that was it.
Whoa.
Yeah. He said,
"That's a great story."
He said, "I'm the boss." Yeah. Badass.
Real gift of the Magi moment here from Connor for all of us.
Just something to take the taste out of our mouths from that linebacker discussion and just, you know, end on a clean, minty taste.
All right. Connor is back on Tuesday with a Weak Side podcast. And I'm getting real close to the point where I'm just going to read off the names of people who are not subscribing yet, because you are doing a disservice to yourself. And no, that's it. Just to yourself. That's go subscribe to the Weak Side podcast. Connor, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Connor Orr and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed as well as the feeds for the Weekside Podcast and the Albert Breer Show. They are all available for free on Apple Podcasts. And once you do subscribe, please leave a rating and review for all of them. It really does help other people find the shows, which are also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.